For those of you just joining, I have an orange chair.
Sages, curse you Zelda, curse you insert credit podcast. This is episode 66. I'm Alex Jaffe, and my favorite C-list villain from a major video game franchise is Tatanga, the evil space alien from Super Mario Land.
Oh man, that guy.
My name is Frank Cifaldi, and that is way too weird to have to think of on the fly.
Let's see if David Hellman can do any better.
I'm David Hellman, and I just froze up immediately. Like, starting a podcast with a quiz trivia question like that is... Wait, this whole thing is like a game, though.
Yep.
Yeah.
We all lost. Tim, are you going to take it home? Are you going to win this?
My name is Tim Rogers, and my favorite C-list villain from a video game is...
He's looking at the shelf. I don't have anything to look at around me.
I want to say the little... I don't know his name, but the little jerky... Emperor Pilaf looking guy that you have to fight in Blue Dragon because he's just constantly thwarting you and he has these giant airplanes.
That's a good one. I got one. The first boss from House of the Dead 2, or as I like to call it, the Typing of the Dead. The little guy who says suffer like G did.
Suffer like G did?
Yeah.
And then he's actually a G-list villain.
Oh, that's true. That doesn't count then. Well, I'm just drawing a blank. So who is this David Hellman guy that was speaking?
He's David Hellman. Tell us about yourself.
Yes. I'm just going to be listening, actually.
Oh, you're just here to...
Yeah.
Just likes to watch.
You'll
be a Hellman, my son.
I'm just here to listen to you guys, and if any of you have concerns with each other or someone's getting on your nerves, I'm sort of like an HR department. Here for the show.
So. Oh, thanks, Dave.
Yeah, we've needed more
like
some mediation for a while.
HM department because of your last name.
You would think that some kind of host would do something like that. Maybe this show should get on that.
Have you ever considered changing your last name to Heckman so that children's and young Christians can pronounce it more comfortably? Can I call you David Heckman?
You can, and I won't correct
All
you.
Right, I'm going to call you Heckman.
David Hellman is a longtime friend of ours and therefore the show, a very talented artist. He worked on a video game called Braid, I think.
Braid.
And
soft G.
Working on a really cool comic book that was kickstarted. What are you calling that? Second Quest?
Second Quest. With Tevis Thompson, Tevis Thompson.
What was the first quest? Was it Zelda?
Yeah, it's kind of like getting at the idea of kind of worlds beyond worlds. You did a slow head turn that just cracked me up.
Maybe just
maintain eye contact. Don't face away, and then when I'm talking, do a slow, like, rotating security camera head turn towards me. But yeah. It's a comic book that is inspired by Legend of Zelda, and it's about the kind of being an explorer in a video game or outside of a video game.
More like the Legend of Zelda. Is that what this game is called in the story? Is it the Legend of Zelda?
Well, we do play with the idea of inversion as a motif.
So that's good.
It's not actually a Zelda story.
Do you think in the Dark World in Zelda, Link to the Past, it's actually called the game's name changes to a pink to the last? A pink to the last.
Yeah. That's why your default character is a pink bunny rabbit. You're pink to the last.
A pink to the last. Yeah. He's pink, but he ends up changing his fate, and he's not really pink to the last. He's going to pink just in the beginning.
Yeah, it's true.
It's just really misleading altogether.
So how this works is I introduce a topic, we discuss it for 6 minutes, we wrap it up with a final round. Usually whoever wins the show by my very detailed and not arbitrary criteria gets to pick the first topic for next week. Last week's winner was Ian Adams, who wrote in a question. I was in a really weird headspace when I wrote the questions for this week's show, but I'm going to roll with them anyway. And we have an extended final round that should be a lot of fun.
An EFR.
Yes. So our first topic, courtesy of Ian Adams, design the free-to-play game that makes everyone get over their hatred of free-to-play games.
Okay, this is an Ian Adams
question. Design a free-to-play game that to make everybody get over their hatred of free-to-play games? Is that what it is?
Yes. Very much an Ian Adams question. Ian Adams is the designer of Battle Nations, a very much free-to-play game.
I like Battle Nations.
Yeah.
I mean, it's okay.
Well, it's one of I don't think that there's like a game that solves it. I think it's just one of those things that people are going to have to learn to accept with time. I don't think there's like a magic game that's going to make it okay. Like I don't think microtransactions are inherently evil. A lot of them are, but I think for the most part, the popular games that use them are not doing it in an evil way, and it's just something people are going to have to learn to deal with and accept as normal, which they will eventually.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Next question.
there's games that do this stuff, and people are okay with them.
I don't think there's this grand like experiment that no one's done yet that's gonna like convince everybody. I think we've got all of the possibilities pretty well covered by now as far as what you can do with microtransactions in a game, and I think people's got to deal with it. There's nothing wrong with it.
Didn't Peter Molyneux's game Curiosity? Didn't that actually do it? Didn't that kind of lift the stigma once and for all?
Oh yeah, it's over.
Yeah.
Didn't it just kind of everybody goes? Oh, I see what they.
I forgot it was over.
Yeah, it's over, and we finally have our Citizen Kane.
The $10,000 diamond drill. Everybody's yeah. like, yeah, that's it, I guess.
I think, like, sort of shitty microtransactions are just going to be... It's just another way that media can be shitty to users. And right now everyone's paying attention to it, but there are loads of ways that games or other forms of art can condescend to users. So I don't think it's fundamentally different, necessarily. I think it's about expectations to some degree. Like, I can't think of a game offhand, but there's an art app, Paper, for iPad that...
I like that one.
It's totally free, but, like, you get the pencil and then all the other tools you can use are, like, a buck or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the app is free, but then they make you pay for the pens.
Yeah,
for the different
and
pens.
It's, you buy them all, it's still, like, $5 or $6 for the whole thing.
Yeah, you can pay something to unlock all of them right away, which is what
they're
I did.
They're not making you buy ink to refill your fountain pen. Oh, it's so realistic. You have
I wish
to buy
they
the
did,
ink
though.
Cartridge and stick it into the pen in a 3D simulation.
I'm a fan of the coin doublers. I think it's a good way to go because it's like, okay, you're playing the game for free. If you want it to be, you know, a little more fun, then just give us a dollar and we'll double your coins.
Yeah, that's the number one transaction for Jetpack Joyride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's like the first thing you do when you start playing the game, right?
So it's like once you are designing a game like that, you reach a certain point where during the design process, you can't not be thinking about tuning the item drop rates so that it influences people's decisions to pay money. You can't not think, let's just double the prices of half the items in the shop so that people will be a little bit more inspired to buy the coin doubler thing. But so I still like the extra lives thing. You know, like you can play this game this many times a day, and then if you die, you can you can pay this much for some extra lives, and you can lose some progress if you don't play all day or whatever. I feel like that's honest enough, but then how can you not tune the game so that people will die more, you know? And arcade games were not free to play. You had to pay, and then you had to keep paying to get to the end. What if there were arcade games? How's this as a hypothetical? There was an arcade game, like an arcade beat-em-up, that your first life was free, and then if you paid some money, you could keep going. Why didn't anybody do that back in the 90s? That's the better question. That would have been liquid money.
Because you don't have the game on everyone's like magic glass device back then. You have a cabinet that has to be making money. Like,
yeah, but it becomes just a thing, just like surrounded by kids.
Surrounded by kids, one by one, playing their free life.
Yeah, but when you go to an arcade, you're already invested insofar as you're at the arcade, and you've got a pocket full of quarters that you just change out of machine, and you want to put them in something, and you're just walking around looking for something that's got an attract mode running, or maybe you're watching someone else play, and something's going to persuade you, yeah, I'm going to put 25 cents into this.
Yeah, I don't think there's like I don't think there's ever been a barrier to entry in the arcade as the quarter. Like, I feel like just about any game that you might be interested in, you're like, yeah, I'll drop a quarter in that and try it. You know, so I don't think that would be a very effective way of doing things, Tim.
Frank, yeah, no, it was a hypothetical.
Frank, what? You've never been to an arcade in Orthodox Jewish neighborhood.
No, it's true.
There you go.
Please explain. Yeah.
We are quite hesitant to drop our quarters.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
You just keep them in your hand?
If we can stare in a track mode and get the same benefit from playing a game as just watching that over, we will.
I can kind of understand that. I used to just go to these arcades in Japan and just... I would just watch them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I'd just be like, I'd look, watch the attract modes and all these weird old games, and I wouldn't play them most of the time.
Actually, I think the most fun I've had in an arcade was when I was watching these two guys go through Time Crisis, and they were farther than I had ever seen before. And at one point, they died, and they ran out of money, and it's like, no, don't stop, and I gave them some of my quarters so they could keep going. And
that's great.
It was a fantastic time.
That's fantastic. So yeah.
I've done that, and I've had that happen to me too.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's the answer to the question: are arcades dead? It's like, no. This is what we could do. We could have more games that inspire that.
Thanks, Ian Adams. So here comes our seven questions, which I wrote in a weird headspace. Let's deal with them anyway. First one: why are video games fun?
Huh.
Why are video games fun?
Yeah.
That's a good, big question.
Wow, yeah. I mean, it's just, it's tricking your brain is what it's doing, right? It's tricking your brain into thinking it's having a real experience when it's not. It's just releasing, the right chemicals, right, through your body that make you enjoy what you're doing. I mean, that's why anything is fun, though. It's kind of a stupid answer.
It's rotating the brain. It's like when you go to 7-Eleven, you see the hot dogs turning in the little box. That's sort of just turning your brain over.
Is that what happens when you're playing video games? Does your brain rotate on a spit?
It's like a rotisserie brain.
Wow, I didn't know that. Only video games do that.
Yeah, pretty sure.
I think because you're kind of involved with the stuff, I think video games are fun because there's like sometimes there's big dudes with like machine guns in them, and you get to kind of press a button and then see the big dude with the machine gun doing the sort of thing that you can't do.
Yeah.
You can just press the triangle button to steal a car.
Yeah, you just press a button and you have a car. Yeah.
In real life, you would have to stand around. Like, you would have to have really awful things happen to you for dozens of years. You'd have to have a horrible life and go through all sorts of bad things and be in prison and get beat up in prison and smuggle drugs. And eventually, in order to decide in order to obtain the ability to just synaptically go, there's a car, I'm going to steal it, and then just do it the way that you, but in a video game, you just press a button, there it is. You can earn experiences very quickly.
So wait, but what you're saying is that you don't steal a car unless you've already been to prison?
Well, I mean, unless you're the type of person who is cool with prison.
And it's not just stealing cars. It's just synaptically just like car steal now.
I'm going to take it.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to be a take charge kind of person. Everybody. Yeah. Not everybody, but lots of people want to take charge.
And thanks to video games, we finally can.
Thanks to video games, we can take charge. We're in charge of – we're the ones saving the goddarn world.
We can take charge. We can take cars.
Take charge.
I would actually blame Frogger for that, for equating cars with logs in a river. That you could grab a car as easily as you can grab a log.
Exactly.
Well, come on.
That is exactly what is happening.
I think it's actually easier to steal a car than it is to grab a log.
Not in a game, though.
There's always some magic for me, especially as a kid, about making something happen on the TV.
Yeah.
I don't know. It sounds kind of dumb, but
Well, no, like, I mean, no, it doesn't sound dumb, but go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe that's why even, like, the art I make, I've done a lot of digital art, because I want it to happen on a screen. Because I think the screen, like, the screen is beaming out one way, you can kind of reach in and make something happen the other way, like having your, you know, doing something that shows up on the screen. There's just a kind of magic to it somehow.
I think we've refound that magic now with touchscreens. I think that magic is the same magic as, like, touching a screen and having something happen. You know, yeah. Like, I think that's a similar mindset, and I think kids are going through that same thing.
Yeah, I think kids mostly enjoy that nowadays. But I remember the first time we had a TV remote when I was a kid. You know, it's like, oh, you can just touch this and you can turn the TV on, and your brother's watching TV, and you turn it off while he's watching TV, and he's like, "What happened?" And it's like, that was like, that was cool. It's like you're making something happen with the TV, and then the video games were just the same thing, right? Basically the
that's exactly it. You turn things off in front of your brother and confuse him. Yeah.
And then your brother
gets
the
video
really
game
mad.
Equivalent of that was when your brother's jumping over a gap in Super Mario Brothers and you pause it.
Yeah.
Oh, pause that. Pause, yeah.
And he goes, "What happened?" Like that. And you're like, "I don't know. Maybe the controller's broken." And he goes, "Oh." And then that's it.
That's how it works, yeah. That's the magic of video games. That's what they do.
That's basically it.
You steal cars, you steal moments, and you steal brother sanity. That's okay. Video games.
That's why
you can... And you steal kisses.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
And the hearts of millions.
Mm-hmm.
Our next topic, how would you define your relationship with video games?
My relationship with video games. That's a nice.
I know. It's like my best friend that we keep trying to get each other on the phone. Because I actually have a friend like this who called me this weekend and we're supposed to talk Saturday. And I was doing something and I couldn't get him. And I really like the guy and have a lot of affection for him. But we only talk like twice a year.
So video games to you are like. Wait, where are you going with this, David?
I'm trying to like talk more. I'm trying to get games on the phone more often.
Oh, I see. Okay, so
want to get them on the phone.
Is this also a friend that you used to talk to a lot?
Yeah.
Okay, well, you're trying to like sort of get back to calling up video games all the time.
Right. I want it to be easier. I don't want to have to go through the whole. So like, fill me in. What's up in your life? I have no idea what you're doing now. That whole thing.
Yeah, you don't want to do that anymore. You just want to go back to like, hey, what's up? Cool.
Yeah, just low pressure.
Yeah.
Hangouts. You just want to have hangouts with
you. Yeah, you want to hang out with video games. Yeah.
Yeah, I just got through The Last of Us, but I was trying to play that since July, and I kept feeling like it was just too much to actually get into. So I kept putting it down, and finally, I got through it this past week just by devoting solid like 4 hours. But there was just some, I don't know, man. I don't know.
Yeah.
You got that between Sunday when we talked about it and today. That's remarkable.
I got what?
Through The Last of Us. You weren't through it yet on Sunday.
Right? He was near the end.
I finished it Sunday night, yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. I'll mark that on my calendar. Yeah. My David Hellman calendar, I have one.
How about you, Frank?
My relationship with video games is... I mean, I don't want to sound negative, but it's almost like... I'm trying to think of it in terms of like a romantic relationship and what that relationship would actually be like. And it's like, it's a troubled relationship, but it's one where it's like, obviously breaking up is the stupid thing to do. Like, that wouldn't help either of us.
But it's deteriorated to the point that you have a weekly podcast about it.
Yeah, we have to go to podcast therapy together now. But it's like, okay, obviously we're meant to be together. We just gotta make this work one step at a time. That's the kind of relationship that I think I have with video games. You know, it's the honeymoon period's kind of over, but I still love you, baby. But you know, maybe not tonight.
Oh God.
Maybe not tonight, video games.
Smooth.
Blaine's gonna have a hard time picking a title for this episode. Tim?
I've had that one before. I've had that whole maybe not tonight video games thing before. I'm not really sure what my relationship with video games is. I think, I feel like it's a pretty good friend that I've had for a long time, and I've just we've started a business together. And
you don't start a business with your friends, Tim.
We're not really friends so much because it's a business, but we're okay with that. We've got that idea of being able to transition to starting a business together despite having been friends. And we're doing all right with it. And either that or video games are like my parents' cat, you know? It's like they've got a cat, and I don't, and I don't really want one, but other people have cats, and I'm like, that cat's pretty cool. Like, I'll touch that cat, but I'm allergic to cats. My eyes get all itchy. But it's like, that's a cool cat.
You're not really allergic though, right, Tim?
Yeah, I am. Well, why would you think?
I mean, you're not really allergic to a cat.
What do you mean, like, really allergic?
You're telling me about this.
No, that was
there
something
are those
else
who question your allergy.
That was something else I was telling you about. Okay. I am, in fact, actually allergic to cats.
I know.
I am actually, like, no joke allergic. Like, I just get all itchy. So that's video games are like cats.
I didn't know that. So this is a good question. Are you itchy in my house?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Just, you know, it's, I mean, keep in mind that my parents had cats just my whole life. When I was growing up, there's just always cats around, and I'm allergic to them, and there's nothing so that's going to change that.
Does that make the webcomic VG Cats the most accurate commentary on video games?
Yes. Absolutely. Oh, man. VG Cats. Isn't that like the really, really, really bad one? Isn't that like...
It's a really, really, really bad one.
I mean, isn't there like an upper echelon of terrible video game webcomics?
It's in the pantheon. I don't know if it's the god of the gods. I don't know if it's the Zeus of the pantheon, but it's a Hephaestus.
What's the worst video game webcomic?
Probably Control-Alt-Delete.
That's the one I've heard so much about.
Yeah. It, probably that one, the one with the abortion subplot and the
the miscarriage.
Yeah,
never heard of that website until that.
Oh, the miscarriage
plot.
Thing.
It's like, whoa. Yeah, my girlfriend's pregnant. It's like, you know, the baby's dead. Oh, no. And then the next episode, it's like, so I was at GameStop.
Right.
It's like, okay, guy just decided I'm going to cool it with this writing about stuff that people might think is real.
All right. Our next topic.
That's the end of my... I
wanted some kind of siren to go off while Tim was saying that.
Yeah.
I'm cool.
There we go.
This is an introspective episode. I'm cooling it on the sirens.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Which video games are the most personally empowering?
Empowering?
Pac-Man.
Yes.
Pac-Man is the most empowering game. It's a game about becoming empowered and chasing your personal demons.
Yeah. The ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
There's. I've always kind of talked about this when I talk about game design with people. Pac-Man is very, very direct, very simple. I mean, I'm not going to try to pretend that the person who made it had some great metaphor in mind, but... You know, you've got these ghosts that are chasing you helplessly, and they kill you, and then you get these things that there's only one of in each corner, these four moments that you get in the whole game where you touch them, and now everything's flashing, and you are cool, and they're the losers, and they're the chumps, and they're the losers, and you can eat them.
His name's Iwatani, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've talked to Iwatani.
Toru Iwatani.
I've talked to him about it, and it's not like he didn't have a metaphor in mind. He just had a dramatic arc in mind, which was
the hunter. The hunted becomes the hunter.
Yeah, he just wanted that feeling of turning the table are you okay? You having like
my knuckles got stuck in my coffee cup because I pushed them in too far.
Oh, man. Your knuckles!
But now they're out.
Supposed to keep them about like that, but I just I went and pushed him straight through. I'm not going to demonstrate it again.
Don't do that, man. But you turned the table on your cup now, and you're the predator in the
cup. Now the cup is the jerk.
Yeah. So you bite that cup, and then eyeballs fly out.
I don't bite porcelain though.
Oh, that's a good call. I mean that's you know it might have come across as a joke answer or something, but I mean like it's such a simple concept that I think that is the most empowering game. Although I'll give it to Ms. Pac-Man just because it's a better game.
It's faster, it's stickier, it's
crunchy. And it's about female empowerment.
Yeah.
Because there's a bow on her head.
There's a bow in her head, yeah. What's the difference between Pac-Man and Ms. Pac-Man?
Bow. Lipstick, too.
There's a bow beauty mark.
The beauty mark. That was a reference to the film Wayne's World.
This is not well known, and I don't think there are any pictures online, but when, I forget the guy from General Computing or whatever that did Ms. Pac-Man, when he was talking at California Extreme one year, he was showing some early concepts and stuff from Ms. Pac-Man, early sprite work, and first version of her had hair and looked really weird. Yeah.
And then there was a version where she had legs.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
it
was
terrifying looking.
Is that the one on the cabinet?
No, no. It's like it was like a little tiny round thing, and then some legs. It was still a square, overall square object. It was terrifying looking.
Oh, and that wasn't Miss. I mean, it was a game that became Miss Pac-Man, but it was was a Hangley Man. Was that what they called it? It was like their first like hack of Pac-Man was like a little Pac-Man guy with legs, and then that became Miss Pac-Man. Pac-Man's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Pac-Man's real cool. It's just like, boom, there you are.
And the story of Ms. Pac-Man is even cooler than Pac-Man. one of my favorite game development stories. And
it's a classic.
Someone should write like the definitive article on how Ms. Pac-Man was made, because it's really cool.
Well, okay. Pac-Man's a pretty good answer, because it's actually... At first I was like, well, wait, it's so confining. You're in this maze, and you can only turn, you know, when you get to the end of a corridor. But it's actually the confinement that enables you to, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When you're sort of put in a corner, that's when your true strength comes out sometimes. So it's got that contrast of confinement and then empowerment. It's
the fight or flight thing, yeah.
Right.
And it is like worth noting that the power pills are in the farthest corners, geometrically. Mm-hmm. They're the most... geometrically disadvantageous portions of the field. So actually, Pac-Man Battle Royale, the four-player Pac-Man, that's a really empowering game because you're... Have you guys played this? The four-player Pac-Man Battle Royale, the recent one? So you've got... It's four players, and you're trying to eat each other, but you can only eat each other if you get a power pill. So it's just mind-blowing because you're trying to avoid getting eaten by the other guys, but also to eat them when they're not empowered. And it's such an accomplishment when you actually eat a guy. It's a brilliant, brilliant game. And it's just, you feel like God when you eat a dude. And now I just want to say a more trivial answer. There's a scene in Gears of War 2 when you're in a tank, and the tank fires these really big, giant grenades that blow up really, really good with such perfect timing on everything. That was it's just this scene where, you know, Gears of War is about inches. You're killing two or three guys at a time. But then there's this scene where you're really late in the game. You're in a tank and you're just blowing dudes up, just hundreds of them. And it just feels really good because it still feels like the game. I thought that was a good example of now you've got a super weapon in a game. Mm-hmm. It's just very mechanically well implemented.
Mm-hmm.
I liked Bullet Witch for that reason. That it
good old BW.
It actually put the cutscene-like powers in the context of, you're the one doing this. It felt like it was part of the game, because there was no, like, cutaway. It was actually happening there in the field.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of a game where you, like, start with no weapon, then you get one, and, like, doors just open for you. But, I mean, that happens a lot, but it's never been, like, super empowering that I can remember.
Can we get one last example before we move on?
Of empowering games?
Yes.
Super Pac-Man?
Perfect.
Power Pac-Man.
Pac-Man Jr.
Pac-Pal.
You could recycle something Tim said earlier, which is playing Super Mario Brothers two-player Because it ought to be a purely symmetrical game. You're taking turns playing. But in fact, whoever's player one inexplicably has the power to pause the game and screw with the other player. So it feels like a very illicit form of power.
So Tim could be very empowered screwing with his brother playing Mario, yeah.
Sure.
Or my brother could be very empowered to just play the game and break both of the controllers.
Yeah.
And then ruin my fun forever, which is what he did many times.
Here's
both
our next
controllers? Hang on, Jeffy. Both controllers? He just broke both controllers.
He would break them one at a time. He would play, get mad, slam the controller against the ground.
He would just throw one controller at the other controller.
And no, he would hold the controller like this. He would grip it and just judge gavel, bang it on the ground until it shattered. I'm not even kidding.
I'm sorry.
Brothers.
Yeah, that's how they do.
Maybe you shouldn't have paused so much mid-jump. All right,
Jeffy, you can move on now. Go.
Our next topic. What was the biggest argument you've had about a video game?
I had an argument once where I had written a really good design document that Electronic Arts had approved for a game that would use four guns, and then we had already prototyped the four guns, and they worked really well. And then they hired some guy fresh out of business school who got on the internet and found out that Halo had 24 guns in it, and then he wrote a list of 24 guns, including a pistol, heavy pistol, super super heavy pistol, silenced heavy pistol. He had flamethrower and silenced flamethrower on the list.
Silenced flamethrower. Wow.
Yeah, I didn't want to kill him, but it was at the point where if he got hit by a bus, I would not have cried. I would never cry for my whole life. I would even when I remembered it later. But man, remember that guy got hit by that bus? Yeah, I'm not crying right now.
That's Silenced Flamethrower would be a pretty good alternate name for this whole podcast.
Silenced Flamethrower.
And I hate to admit it, but like that kind of makes sense in the context of that game, too.
That game was a blowjob from a bear trap.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
There's a... Yeah.
I think mine... it's weird. I don't care about game reviews very much at all. Like, I never have, and I've never really done them, but I kind of came out of semi-retirement once to review on 1UP.com when I worked there, The Secret of Monkey Island 2 Special Edition. I'm sorry, Monkey Island 2 LeChuck's Revenge Special Edition is the name of the game. And I reviewed it. I don't know if you guys are familiar with how this remake works, but it's got the original game in there, and you hit a button, and it sort of switches to, like, the HD version, right? And it's got some extra features. It's got some concept art and stuff in it. And I decided, well, there's no point in reviewing the game here. What I'm going to review is this package as if it were a DVD, right? So rather than review Monkey Island 2, the game, or the remake, or whatever, I'm reviewing Special Edition as if it's a DVD. And because of that, I gave it a pretty low score because I had a lot of problems with the presentation. A lot of the implementation of stuff in the original game was just kind of broken. They took out the intro, which is weird. And, you know, my argument is like, well, if this is a special edition, you know, you don't buy a movie on Blu-ray and they cut out a scene and you're cool with that. You know, we can't do that.
Blade Runner, Final Cut.
Well, you know what
it's
you're
like
getting
20 seconds that. Shorter.
But you're intentionally buying that. You're not buying, like, the ultimate edition here. And the argument that I got in with quite a few people was over whether that is how you review a video game product. And I felt like, I still feel like that's the right call, because it's not a new game, it's a remake. It's the DVD packaging of that game.
Would you apply the same to, say, the DuckTales remake?
More like SuckTales.
No. Yeah. I don't care enough to put a lot of thought into it, but I would consider that a new game. I would consider that a remake as opposed to what this was, which was, you know, the special edition Blu-ray release of Monkey Island 2.
We kind of had this exact discussion on last week's episode, but it's a good one.
I don't remember that. Really?
Yeah, we talked about what the difference is between a sequel and a remake.
A secret about all of us on the show, I think, None of us remember anything that happens in this show. So
I remember about 20%.
Like when people like, yeah, when people like when my mom brings up something I said on the show, I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Oh, your mom listens. That's really nice.
My mom does listen to the show. Yes.
How about you, Hellman?
Well, the only time an argument over a game got physical was, I believe, Mega Man 2. I was playing with my childhood. Well, he's still a friend, but we were best friends. You know, in second grade or something, my friend Andrew. And I believe what happened was we were, like, tag-teaming the game, and it was really hard. And I think in frustration, he was sort of, like, spazzing a little bit, and he hit, instead of hitting continue, he hit end. Like, he hit select continue, or maybe hit, like, and I don't know, it escalated, and he threw a fan in my direction.
A fan?
Like a stationary, like a desk fan that would be sitting there, like with a swivel neck.
Okay. Like a guy in a baseball hat with like a foam glove? Like
no, not a baseball fan.
Okay. Was it a Vornado that he threw at you?
Oh, those are
Vornadoes
nice.
Vornadoes are nice. You shouldn't throw Vornadoes.
Yeah, he couldn't really lob it too far, so it crashed to the ground.
Wait, so he threw it at you? Right,
but
it
didn't
hit you, it just
nimbly,
kind of sailed, and then, oh, you avoided.
I leapt backward,
So
the fan just hit the ground.
That's a pretty good story, David.
I can't really think of any other...
that's more of a fight than an argument, though.
I'm thinking of getting a Vornado.
It escalated to the point of physicality. It was an argument before that.
Sure. Tim Rogers is thinking of getting a Vornado, is that what I hear?
Yeah. Just like, because for the white noise.
On the show?
Make right a really now? Good white noise.
Yeah, there should be a Vornado on the show.
For our next
I'll go
segment,
get one at Costco.
Tim will search Amazon for a fan.
Tim, it's getting cold. You should just get a white noise machine, which is a fan that's enclosed without like cold air swishing around.
I don't mind cold air. It actually, it's really warm up in my room.
In your loft room, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, the loft because the hot air rises and it's got a curtain up there. But,
let's move on to our next topic.
Oh, wait, I was almost going to say a couple of things about arguments on video games. Maybe the biggest one I've ever had about a video game was with Brandon Sheffield at a party hosted by IGN at Penny Arcade Expo, and it was about Video Ball. Because there's an element in Video Ball where you can reverse a high-speed shot, which has been hit with the hardest, somewhat difficult-to-release projectile, can spike the ball very sharply in one direction, carrying with it the risk that if it gets hit by another shot, it will reverse. This is the meat and soul of the game. And it had been sort of, we were tooling with physics, and it was kind of turned off for a little bit while we were having a little event at my house, and Brandon was on several winning teams, and when we turned it back on for this party that was at IGN, because we were testing other stuff, he's like, what? You know, why? This is stupid. It shouldn't reverse the ball. There's no way you can use this on purpose. And I'm like, well, it's the high-level technique in the game, and you got to be careful with your slams. That's all. It's to keep the game fun. And he's like, it doesn't keep the game fun. And we had a really, like, we were just talking about it for like an hour, and then me and Kerwin and Porter made fun of Brandon about it. On the drive home, we were like making fun of Brandon for not thinking that the game was fun anymore, even though we know in our hearts and our souls that it's the best.
All right. Yeah. He just didn't like that he was a loser now.
Yeah, people don't like losing. And then, turning that around, this is the final thing I'll say. Once we had an NBA Jam Tournament Edition tournament at my house in Indiana, and my brother and his a Tournament Edition tournament, a TET, my brother and his friend who was going to law school, they were, like, cleaning up. And then I just beat both of them, 296-3, which was, like, an insane score, which is possible only with the hotspots. But I was so good at stealing, I'd mastered the game, that they got really, really mad. Like, just really, really angry. And I was like, well, you know, you want to play again? No. That's the end of that story.
That's not a very good argument, though.
No, well, then I beat them again. I let them play again, but I beat them like 286-13.
Oh, that's good. All right.
Which was
more reasonable.
It was a little bit more reasonable, but they were just so mad. And they got really mad at me, and they just didn't talk to me for like 2 weeks. Wow. And then it was okay after that.
Our next topic. An electromagnetic storm has rendered all electronic devices unusable for the next 30 years.
Right on.
What do gamers turn to as an alternative source of entertainment?
Jerking off.
Labyrinth. The board game Labyrinth. The marble with the turning wooden thing. Labyrinth. That's a video game. Without video.
They turn to drawing pictures of boobies with crayons and then jerking off to them. That's what they turn to. That's what they immediately if this electromagnetic pulse happens and Call of Duty just shrinks to a dot, the kid's gonna go, and then he's gonna get up and get a box of crayons and just draw two circles and then two circles inside them and then a dot inside the circles, and then he's gonna jerk off on it. That's what's gonna happen.
Well, except eventually we're gonna run out of crayons because you need electricity to make them. So they're gonna have to start drawing boobs in the sand with sticks. So they're gonna
boobs in the sand with sticks, and then eventually boobs in the sand with your finger, and then eventually boobs in the sand with your erection, and then this is how fetishes get started.
Championship edition.
And then tournament edition.
Turbo.
How about, I want to release a version of Video Ball called Video Ball Championship Tournament Edition.
That's pretty good. I mean, like, traditional games. I mean, they're going to play games. They're going to, I mean, if not board games or card games, they're going to play, like, physical outside games that maybe don't even require stuff, you know? I mean, it's just a natural, you know, human need to be playing games, you know? Even animals do it. It's not even a human need. It's an intelligent creature need. So
whatever games the animals are playing, we'll try to do that.
Yeah, we'll be
the reindeer games.
Yeah,
I feel like anybody who plays a first-person shooter online would probably have a good time playing soccer. Anybody who plays a real-time strategy game would probably have a good time playing soccer with people outside. Like, maybe that's a controversial statement, but I think they would all be able to enjoy soccer. If you can enjoy StarCraft or Halo, you can probably enjoy soccer. If you just, it's just, if the switch is flipped, it's like, well, this is what I have to do now, then you can do it.
I think you're right.
What if you're not a multiplayer gamer? What if you just like playing video games?
Then GTFO.
Read some books. So if this electromagnetic pulse happens before the release of Video Ball, gamers will turn to Candyland. Mm-hmm. If it happens after the release of Video Ball, gamers will turn to chess.
Very good. Succinctly put.
Very confident.
A plug for your not yet released video game.
Oh man, but it's been played by enough humans to be hot. All right. If you would like to play Video Ball this Saturday in the San Francisco Bay Area, there's a party that's happening that you can come to.
We might tell you about it later. Do you have anything more to say about this electromagnetic storm, or should we move on?
Jerking off is what's going to really happen. Everybody's just going to be masturbating in the street in their car.
For the first 5 or 10 minutes.
Yeah, and then once that's over, they're going to have to think of something else, and then, you know, they'll have 5 minutes of wondering, oh God, what do I do, before they just start jerking off again.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Our next topic, what is currently the most poisonous mainstay of video game development?
Development or design?
Development.
The most poisonous mainstay?
Well, crunch time, duh. Crunch time is the most poisonous. Crunch time doesn't work. Crunch time results in sloppy work that just makes things even worse. And it destroys families, and it, well, you get dinner out of it, though. You get free dinner, so maybe that's not
free pizzas.
Yeah, a lot of free pizzas.
The secret of effective crunch time is don't have a family and don't care and really be making a game you like. That's it. But that doesn't happen for...
Yeah.
That doesn't happen for 99% of people. So.
Oh, you know what? I guess my mom isn't listening because she's calling me, so she's not listening right now, Javi.
All right, maybe she'll get the iTunes version.
Yeah.
Pick up and tell her we said hi.
Okay.
We're waiting.
I let it ring too long. She hung up. Sorry.
What a sadness.
She probably had a very strong feeling about this topic and wants to join
us. Crunch time, yes. I believe your mom has been the victim of crunch time.
My mom is EA spouse.
Yeah.
Whoa! Your dad works for EA? That's so cool.
Yeah, isn't that great? Yeah. He makes that Madden.
Your dad makes Madden?
Well, you know.
Well, is your dad great? John Madden?
Yes. Don't tell
him. You know, video games are a family business for Frank. He's got a dad at EA and an uncle at Nintendo.
Hey, I mean, like, I mean, yeah. Any answer I give is just going to be related to quality of life while making video games, right? It's not going to be related to how the final product comes out, and it's, you know, crunch time is terrible. It's stupid. Other than that, I don't know. Like, Tim, what do you think? You're sort of a different type of developer than I am.
Yeah, I think I'm trying to be a different type of developer than anybody is. I'm trying to be the best.
Like no one ever was.
Right.
The best.
So,
I'm definitely the best. Let's face it on that.
Okay, but, you have been through some crap though. You've worked with ideas and you've been through some crap, and there's some common thread here.
I think that the focus testing is pretty bad, but I don't want to say focus. Like I want to think of a bigger term than focus testing. Making games that you presume other people are going to like, yes, instead of making a game that you know, mm-hmm, you're going to like. Like we would make a gun in a game, and then I would be like, hey guys, check this out, and they'd all come around and be shooting it and be like, heck yeah, yeah, oh man, look at that, oh dude, look at that, look how cool that is, yeah, I'm shooting that guy. And then some guy with a hat, and he just didn't know how to take his own goddarn hat off, because obviously there's no way he could have liked that hat, comes up and he's like, yeah, I've read some research that guns should be like this. I don't know. Do you want to try it? I don't know. Do you want to try it? I wouldn't really. Let me see. Well, I don't know. Maybe. And it's like, that's it. And it's like, oh, yeah, well, this guy thinks we should do something else because, you know, he's read some stuff about other stuff, and it's like
he's got a hat on, though?
Yeah, he did not know how to take the hat off. This guy.
Okay, I see.
Because there's no way you would wear that hat on purpose. Yeah. It must have been glued to his cranium. I wonder if he ever got fired. Like, I feel like he's the kind of guy who would get fired for some really banal reason.
Banal.
Like he accidentally burned a ream of copy or paper.
How do we sort of narrow that down and define it? Because I think
people need to trust their instincts and the experience of playing the game. Then
presumption metrics, I guess.
Yeah, I was gonna say, because this is very much related to, like, you know, how, like, when Zynga fails, right? Like, when Zynga fails, it's because they're trusting their hard numbers as opposed to human judgment, right?
God, I love a hard number.
Yeah. But I mean, that's kind of what you're getting at. It's like metrics and like focus testing is part of that. And it's like, I guess what you're saying is that a terrible trend is sort of taking power away from the game designer as a creator, right? And putting it in the hands of the greater populace that doesn't really know what they want.
Deferring to some imaginary kind of distilled wisdom rather than making
shifting the focus from fun.
Yeah.
There you go. Trademark.
Something else.
That should be the tagline for Action Button.
Shifting the focus from fun. Here at Action Button Entertainment, we don't care about fun. We care about sterile, lifeless, hard, real experiences. We care about what other people think.
Not what we think, not what you think.
Not what
the other people think.
Not what you think.
You have not met these other people, and you likely never will.
They're shadowy people. They might be reptiles.
If you ever see one of these other people, kill them.
Tell them to buy our game.
Kill them.
All right, let's move on.
All right. Do you ever feel like video games have left you behind?
Left me behind.
I have felt that in the past and no longer feel that because I grew up.
where there was a period where you did feel that way, but you moved
through
it.
There was a period where, like, when I guess when I felt that way, it was when video games were just, you know, console games you bought in stores. You know, I felt like video games left me behind at that point, but I feel like they've come back around and they've welcomed me back in. But when my only option was sit down in front of the TV and have a large experience, I felt like video games were moving away from me.
Right, yeah. I can identify with that.
Yeah.
Like I said, Last of Us took me forever to get through, and ultimately it was really interesting, but it was like, for the first time, I was trying to get into this game and just finding myself not remembering the what the buttons did. Because like a lot of stuff to and I never had that feeling before. I mean, I feel like I sound old saying that, but you know, it's just a lot of stuff and a lot of systems. And you know, if you play it for a couple hours and then say, "Well, 2 hours is a good period of time to enjoy something for. I'm going to do something else now." Maybe don't think of it again for a week. You come back and you know, it works if what you do when you get a new game is sit down for 8 hours and play it, which is what I always used to do as a kid. You just sort of like really embrace it and learn everything and. Yeah, in that way. But I don't necessarily think games have... I think it's more me than games.
That's the kind of relationship you have, then, with games. Is
Once again.
Not you, yeah, not you, it's me. Yeah.
It would be good if we could talk more.
Yeah.
So it just wouldn't be such a big deal.
Right.
I don't feel like games have left me behind. Maybe I've left some video games behind, though. By not playing them all the way.
I think, like, for me, like, it's not just the games changed, it's that they reminded me that they're more than their form. You know what I mean? Like, it's like if it's like when people dismiss comic books because they've got them superheroes. You know, it's like, well, that's, you're confusing the form for the art, you know, and I guess I felt that way about video games for a time. I was also kind of unhappy job-wise in video games, so that might have contributed to that. But no, video games are cool, and they always were, and I came back around, and I'm no longer an idiot about it.
I'm going to go ahead and say I think video games are still cool.
Yeah.
I play video games sometimes, like the good ones. I feel like there's – like I can't say that games as a whole have left me behind by becoming about different subject matter or different – styles of playing them. I mean, there's still games like Super Mario 3D World coming out that I'm really just raging excited about. And there's games that I can sit down and hang out with. I got Video Ball. Video Ball's never going to leave anybody behind. No man left behind. No woman left behind. No dog left behind with Video Ball.
It's, yeah.
Nobody it's gets like left behind.
Nobody.
Do the computer games based on Left Behind, the book series, do those leave people behind?
I think those aren't good.
Yeah, probably not.
I know, I've seen those. We should play one of those on the show.
You really should.
Oh, God.
This show, the other show.
The other show.
Yeah, the other
which
show.
We'll talk about after this show's over.
Sure. What were you going to say, David, when we interrupted you?
No, not at all. I feel like it's broader than ever. I feel like everything is still being made. Even genres that are supposedly dead, like the adventure game, well, now we have, you know, Double Fine doing their crowd-funded adventure game. And I don't know. It feels like it's more inclusive than ever. So,
yeah,
so maybe the games that left, maybe games did leave us behind, but now they're doubling back.
Yeah.
Coming back to get us.
Yeah.
And that's they what I realized thought before, and there's
finish us off.
They're helicopter. And there was always some truth to that, but like I feel like maybe I was overreacting when I thought that, but yeah, I don't know.
This is
helping me a lot, you guys. This is helping me really get through some issues, right?
Well, that's
here,
what's important.
Podcast, yeah.
I'm glad I could do that for you, Frank.
Yeah. It's just this orange thing has just really opened my eyes. Just all the orange happening.
All right, for our listeners who don't really care about this touchy feely crap, we're gonna do a fun final round.
You know, I love you guys. Is what I'm trying to say.
Man,
I just love you all. Yeah.
I call this final round Shame Famitsu. Famitsu is a magazine which is published in Japan, which in the past has been famous for its critical reviews and being very reluctant to give out a perfect score to a game.
I'm just feeling a lot of love is all, you know?
Okay. However, that award has been granted 22 times to date, And I feel like what we should do is take each of those games and call Famitsu out on their bluff and point out why these games aren't perfect.
Okay, this is not going to be very fast.
No, this can be perfect. This can be fast.
That's why I've retitled this final round as opposed to lightning.
Yeah, so there's 22 games that got 4 tens, the 40 out of 40.
Yes.
And we're going to just try and say that none of them are actually perfect. Can we all assign them a number grade as well?
Yes.
So it's just say what number it should be instead of 10.
Yes, we're going to do that. We'll begin. We're going to go in chronological order from the first game to get a 40 out of 40 to the most recent. We begin with The Legend of Zelda: Ocarina of Time.
It's for that babies. Game,
yeah, it's for babies. It's for old people. It, according to that Salon.com article, it's sexist and racist.
I saw that. Are we all jumping in because this is the format and we're supposed to knock these
just
down,
jump
or?
Yeah, just jump it, man. Just jump.
So
it.
We're supposed to take these things down. Or yes. Can we say that seems
wait, are you, okay, are well, you, wait, wait, we're not taking them down. We're explaining why they are not perfect.
Are you going to say it's a 10 perfect. Out of 10, David Hellman? If you want to say it's a 10 out of 10, it's okay. So I think it's a 9 at best because the pre-rendered graphics outside of the Temple of Time are really, really gross. Pre-rendered, and it's like it's the pre-rendered graphics inside the whole Hyrule Castle area.
I would have really liked bad. If they'd used the at that time they had this, they were on cartridges, which is supposed to be about like no load times and everything. Well, they could have then had it like gone crazy with interconnected regions. You would have thought. I'm not sure what would have been in the way there, but
they could have figured
would
that
have been
out.
Cool. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Also, a horse could have been faster.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Like, like
Soul
10
Calibur.
Times faster.
Soul Calibur. Well, mm-hmm.
So
the graphics aren't nearly as good as Soul Calibur 2. And the lady's breasts aren't nearly as big as they are in Soul Calibur 5.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the breasts literally got about 600% bigger. So.
So is Soul Calibur 5 a 10?
No. It's not a 10 because it's too dumb.
What is Soul Calibur 1?
Soul Calibur. I actually like Soul Calibur 1. I'd give it an 8.
Cool. It was like a really pretty fighting game for the Dreamcast when that was new, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's how I remember it. It was like you needed to have a nice looking fighting game with nice looking fighters doing cool stuff. On your new console, and that's what that was. And it was like Toshinden to the PlayStation. Like, mm-hmm. that was like an incredible game when it came out because you could do the sidestep and it was, characters were really big on the screen.
Yeah, big characters, lots of graphics.
Vagrant Story.
Vagrant Story. Okay, Vagrant Story is not a 10. I like it a lot, but that game is just an explosion, just a grotesque collage garbage salad of UI stuff. That's just a huge mess. It's a garbage salad of UI.
Mm.
It is a fantastic game, but if it were like exactly like Dark Souls, it would maybe be a 10. And if Dark Souls were exactly like Vagrant Story in terms of that stuff, you know, it might be a 10 as well. That's me. That's all I got.
So what is it? So what is it as is?
I'd give it an 8.5.
Fair enough. Let's move on.
The Legend of Zelda: The Wind Waker.
The Wind Waker, more like. First of all, it was given 4 tens when it was not in 1080p.
And yeah, now it's, what's wrong with... Yeah, well, come
10
on.
10 years
come
later,
on.
it's in 60 FPS.
Did they review the new one?
What?
Did they review the re-release? Was that a 10 out of 10, or did they not...
No, man, did they review it? I wonder if they reviewed it. Maybe it's not even out in Japan yet.
I did have a problem with that game, and I don't know how to phrase this fairly, but the reason I stopped playing it is because I was having a good time, I was making forward progression, I got everything, it was just a good, solid forward march through the game, and then I got to this one temple where I just couldn't solve a puzzle. And I beat my head against a wall for like an hour and then walked away from it and never went back to it, which is maybe not fair of me, but to me, that's kind of a flaw. I don't know how you fix that.
I think there's a lot of nonsense in it. There's a whole lot of get the teacup and give it to the, yeah. the fisherman and then get the
and there's a whole lot of like get the three MacGuffins and then, oh, cool, now get these other three MacGuffins sort of things.
And yeah. then there's the parts where the characters are talking at you and it's just like, man, come on. This is annoying. I just want to do stuff and go to dungeons.
I mean, it's the first game where your vehicle talks to you and tells you what to do and that you can't go certain places. Like in Ocarina of Time, your horse can't go certain places because it won't walk up like a staircase, things like that. But it never stopped, turned its head around and said, let's not go to the southern area of the you know, Hyrule Field. No,
reason being that I'm a horse.
Yeah, that is not a 10.
What is it?
I liked it a lot. It's a 9.
I think it's a all 5, right. which is like Whoa. Tough scoring.
Whoa.
So that's like Tevis Thompson scale scoring. I think it's like an incredibly charming game, but really, really frustrating, disappointing to go through.
All right. Let's call
also
it
the first boss is awful. The first boss you fight.
Let's call it a 6.8.
Okay. 6.8. That's good.
All right. Nintendogs.
Oh. No cats? Come on. No corgi? Wait, there was a corgi.
Well, you had to buy the corgi edition, didn't you?
Yeah, you did. They're just puppies, though. They're not even full dogs.
Yeah,
you can't. You can pet them and you can throw a frisbee at them. You can't walk them. What the heck? Not enough features. 6.
Final Fantasy 12.
It's another case of a game just being an explosion of UI garbage salad. It had that license board thing where you had to purchase all of your upgrades. It had the whole thing where there's this gambit system that lets you program your dudes so that they behave strategically according to your general whims. But you had to like buy these gambits. Like you had to go to a shop and pay a guy 100 gold pieces so that you can attach the fire spell to a prioritized AI script that tells a guy when an enemy is weak to fire, use fire on him. You know, it's like, what? Why do I have to go pay in-game money for that? It's like they were running out of crap to stuff the game with. And that bothers me. I'd give it a 9. All really, right. really good Super... game over all around, though. Super what?
Super Smash Brothers Brawl.
Nope.
I didn't play it.
And, yeah.
Big dumb game, big dumb and floppy. Just don't like how big dumb and floppy is. It is.
So 3.
Let's give it a 4.
All right. Speaking of 4, Metal Gear Solid 4: Guns of the Patriots.
They gave that a 10.
They gave it. They gave
it 40. I guess. Yeah.
They gave it 40. Yeah.
Yeah. They gave it a 40.
Wow.
They gave it 4 tens, and that's terrible.
I'm just gonna go ahead and say that game is like. It's worse than like being trapped in an elevator with a homeless person.
It had a lot of fun little moments. Like it had a lot of weird little stages, and like, I mean that one where you're like wearing a mask and you're like sort of spying and stuff. That was cool, and that it had fun times. But like
it's ropey.
It's just I don't know. It's just earthquakey. It's all over the place. Schizophrenic is what it is. It's just like. It's not a good experience all the way through. And get over these cutscenes. Just stop it. Like, learn to tell a story without just... I mean, it's like... These Metal Gear games, it's like if you're watching a movie. A movie just stops and, like, the usher comes in and, like, gives you a whole bunch of backstory about... Like, he just, like, walks up to you and tells you about the characters and what's happening behind the scenes, and then, like, he walks away and then the movie starts again. That's what these games remind me of.
Yeah.
Because that's happened to you.
That happens to me every... These weird alternative theaters in Berkeley.
5 out of 10.
5 out of 10.
I'd give it, like, a 7, to be fair. It's a good game.
Okay. So let's give it a 6.2.
Cool.
All right. 428 Fusasareta Shibuya De.
Yeah,
is that that train game? Is that like when you're a conductor?
No,
or
it's a sound novel by Chunsoft.
Oh,
it's okay.
Sound novel.
I don't know. It's still the kind of story written by a guy who couldn't get a job on TV. You know, so 6.
All right. Dragon Quest IX, Sentinels of the Starry Skies.
Of all the Dragon Quest games, it is an insult that they gave that one 40 out of 40. Dragon Quest VIII was definitely a better game than that, but they gave it like an 8 or something because it got, oh, I got motion sick from the 3D. It's like, get over yourself. Dragon Quest IX was a tiny little trifling Dragon Quest game with a whole bunch of social features attached to it, and it was floppy and dumb. And Dragon Quest V and VIII and VI and IV, III and I and VII are better. So go home. Give Dragon Quest IX an 8.
Monster Hunter Tri.
Man, they had made so many of those games by that point, and they still, like, nobody working at all on any of those games had ever seen a game that had an interface that worked. So Monster Hunter Tri can go ahead and get a 4 out of 10 from me.
Whoa, whoa.
Nice.
You know, I'd rather get paid to work on spreadsheets.
Vicious. Bayonetta.
That's... don't like the character, and I think the story is a bunch of flaming nonsense. It could have just been chill. It could have just been like, we don't care about the story, but instead you've got characters just talking and talking. And it's just like, God, who cares?
Right.
It could have just been a character wearing sunglasses and slashing people up.
It was way too invested in its own ridiculousness.
Yeah, and I mean, I know I can skip the cutscenes or whatever, but, you know, why couldn't the developers have skipped the cutscenes? What were you going to say about it, David Heckman?
Oh, nothing. Well, I was just surprised. I haven't really played it. But it's fun. Is it a great game? Is it like one of the great action games?
It's got some. It's better than the Devil May Cry games in terms of its mechanics and its feel.
Yeah.
It's really, really silky. They don't make them like that so much.
Why does she have shorter hair in the new one? When they announced the Wii U version, they were like, "Look, she got a haircut." Like it was a big deal.
For fun. Because her powers are hair-based, so
hair
is kind of a theme in the series. I'm going to say an 8.8. Is anyone going to
disagree with that? Let's do it. What's the next one?
New Super Mario Bros. Wii.
It has the aesthetic of a Malaysian Flash game of the mid-1990s.
Agreed.
We're going to get a lot of email from Malaysian listeners, but I agree with the spirit.
Thanking you for the compliment.
Because they probably
Brandon probably knows like three great Malaysian game studios.
Three great Malaysian Flash games.
Yeah, that's a weird one because like the central the big feature of that game is its multiplayer, but the
it's troublesome meddling bumbling multiplayer.
It's troublesome, yeah. It's like what they did was they threw everyone on the screen and they immediately found that it was really problematic and just decided that that was a feature, not a bug.
And they just went.
It was downright Trumbumblesome.
Just go ahead and leave that in there. Trumbumblesome, yeah.
Yeah.
Trumbumblesome.
But what are we giving it?
Trumbumbles?
What are we giving
it? I'd still give it a 7 out of 10 because it's still a side-scrolling Mario game. But the physics are weird, too, so.
Metal Gear Solid, Peace Walker.
Metal Gear Solid, Please Go Home is what I would say about that game. It's on the goddarn PSP. You ever held a PSP? I'd rather hold hands with a grizzly bear than hold a PSP.
Wait, you're saying...
I'd rather hold hands with a grizzly bear that had cayenne pepper all over his butt.
It's impossible for any PSP game to be a 10 out of 10.
As far as I'm concerned, and with all apologies to anybody who was a hardware engineer on any of the PSPs, yeah, that thing is... I always say that Android phones are like trying to fall asleep in an airport. A PSP is like trying to fall asleep in a bus station.
All right, what's the score?
I played it a little bit. It had some neat little strategy mechanics in it, but it's on PSP and it's goddarn Metal Gear, so 5 out of 10.
All right, Pokemon Black and White.
Pokemon Black and White's cool... But it didn't bring the innovation to the series that newcomers craved. So let's go ahead and say that it's a 9 out of 10.
All right. Skyward Sword. The Legend of Zelda, Skyward Sword.
More like the Legend of Zelda, Swyward Scored.
what is it scored, Tim?
Well, you know, I'm going to score it a 6 out of 10.
So I'm assuming the full game is like the E3 demo, which is just a bunch of people talk all the time, and then you play like arcade games.
Oh, there's so much talking. But then the dungeon, like the dungeons are good once you get to them, which is like 20 hours of wading hip deep in diarrhea, you know, diarrhea with super glue in it, you know.
David is illustrating a book based on his reaction to this game, so I want to be heard from him.
That's right. Yeah, I basically was driven to the point of creating a comic book in response to my experience of playing this game. I don't know. I think the shop you go to in your hometown, that marketplace area, is probably like the most inexplicable. It's kind of all right. First of all, I have to give the game a lot of credit for its overworld regions. Like the forest area is a lot of fun to run around. There's a lot of over and under and going around and things like that, and landmarks in the distance to move towards and that sort of thing, which there should have been a lot more of in the other games. So yeah. In that way, I thought it was actually like good for them. They really advanced it there. But it's, you just get this feeling going through that you're always kind of being like prodded to the next waypoint, and it kind of never lets you roam free. And they somehow, they're just sort of tripping over their own feet the whole way. Like, they give you this forest area to run through, but your first experience of it, which is really where the magic should happen because you don't know what it is yet, the entire time they're interrupting you with these goofy characters. They got to say something to you, and then they're like, go right over there now. And so you keep going through thinking, like, I'll get through all this, and then I'll be able to explore, but it just goes that way through the whole game. So there's this kind of, it just grinds you down. By the time you're near the end, you're like, oh, the whole game is like this, and I'm never really going to be left alone. So the shop, by the way, they're like, I think it highlights, there's some weird notion that presentation is really important, and elaborate presentation is a virtue. So it's good inherently to have characters talking to you at length and saying a lot of written dialogue and pantomiming. And that value is upheld above just the player's immediate needs, which are to interact with shopkeepers like, as user interface, I need to get a potion, so let me like look at something quickly and like identify in a menu what I need. Instead, you have to go through this dialogue tree and hear the same shit again and again and again. So there's a lot of just inexplicable stuff where they could have really helped themselves out by not trying so hard.
What number would you give it, Hellman?
Also a 5, even though because Wind Waker should have been better. So I scored them the same. But part of my score in Wind Waker is more the disappointment of, like, that game should have been just great because it had so many strengths.
It had good art.
It had amazing art, and, like, the world looks great, but it kind of, I don't know, like, the forest area. You get to the forest island, you have to go up the same way every time.
Oh, man, that forest island, I just got there yesterday.
Yeah.
I'm playing Wind Waker through again.
It looks like it's going to be great, but then it's sort of like, you kind of give it a break because it's so cute and there's so many nice little bits, but I don't know. It's just not as much fun as you think it is, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first of two Western games on the list, The Elder Scrolls V Skyrim.
Playing that game is really bad. Fighting an enemy in that game is like whipping a balloon animal rhinoceros into deflation with an empty garbage bag.
I was going to say the same thing.
Yeah. that's what I said in my Kotaku.
Exact same. Yes.
It's it's just a big bag of parts. I don't like any of it. I want to like it.
So a 0.
I'll give it a 3. I want to like it. The 3 is from wanting to like it.
Final Fantasy 13 2.
No. No, Final Fantasy 13, no. More like.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Is there a number associated with no?
Let's give it a 2, because it's Final Fantasy 13 2. No.
2 as in this is what this game is scored.
Yeah. There you go.
A 2 as in 2 out of 10. Kid Icarus Uprising.
Kid Icarus, more like, I was going to try to think of a word, like downsinking. Just going to kind of try to reverse the word, uprising.
I never played it, but it puts you at risk for a repetitive stress injury, doesn't it?
Yeah, I've heard that.
I heard it was really good, but
more like at-riskerous.
I mean, they were at-riskerous. Oh, baby.
More like Robin Thicarus.
So I was just going to finish what I was saying. Uprising indicates that you're getting a boner from the game, but I just want to say that you don't get a boner from it. It's the opposite of a boner.
So false down, advertising, man.
Down, Kid Icarus down flopping, they should call it. So uprising is what you have to do with your hands when you put the DS into that monstrous stand. It's like any game that comes with an accessory fundamentally has to get docked a point that you, okay. that needs an accessory. It's like, just play to the strengths of the hardware. It's like, we gotta have this weird plastic stand. You gotta play it on a table. Isn't it a portable video game system? Why didn't you make it for a home console, you jerk? So there you go. I've never played it more than 30 seconds, and I fundamentally have to dock it at least a point, so it is maximum 9. No way it could have gotten a perfect score.
Let's give it a 9. Yakuza 5.
Oh, man, come on. They can't even pay $5 extra to, voice act the games most of the time. There's, you get, 4 voice-acted cutscenes, and then the rest is just text boxes and postcard backgrounds, and the story's not even really that good. The games are all right, though. 8 out of 10. What's next? Next one.
JoJo's Bizarre Adventure All-Star Battle.
Oh, man, I played some of that, and here's the short answer. Nope. It's okay, but I mean, come on. Just because it's got some graphics in it, why don't you go home and read a book, you know?
Get some real graphics out of that book.
Yeah, get some head graphics. Was that the most recent one?
No, there's one more.
Wow, I thought that was the most recent one. Wow, what's the newest one?
Well, what's the number for JoJo?
What's the number? What do you mean?
Yeah. Score.
What number does JoJo
What's our score?
I'd give it a 7, because I like JoJo. Right.
Our last game is the second and last Western game, Grand Theft Auto V.
Yeah, I don't think that gets no 10. I'd give it a 5, because that's how many Grand Theft Autos it is.
Well, I mean, I played it at your house, and people just do not obey the laws of traffic in that game at all.
They ain't figured that out, no.
Yeah, they still haven't figured it out. It's really hard to parallel park, and a lot of people look exactly the same, and sometimes ambulance drivers just, turn to you and punch you for no reason, so...
yeah, that ambulance...
11 out of 10, maybe?
Too much yelling.
11 out of 10.
I would give it 5 out of 10 to counteract your 11.
Okay.
So I would say, on principle, I have to give it a low score because of how much people are talking about it.
It's an incredible technical achievement.
Oh, an ICI. Wait, an ICA. Same
thing. ITA. Right?
All right, so...
Technical starts with a T. So.
Incredible technical.
All right, let's give it a 7.x.
7.x.
All right. Are we done?
And yes, we are done. That is this episode of the Insert Credit Podcast. David Hellman.
This episode.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us. If people want to check out Second Quest and your other projects, where should they go?
Oh, yeah. You can just go to davidhellman.net.
It's
a very simple website, easy to navigate. And, yeah, you can find my comic or my...
It's got links to some of them other comics, too.
Does it have a link to the past on it?
Does it have a pink to the last on it?
Yeah.
Sadly, no. I'll open up Dreamweaver right now.
Okay.
So I want to thank
you for having me on, by the way. I really appreciate it.
It was a pleasure, David Hellman.
It's good time.
A pleasure to have a positive force on the podcast to counteract the general air of negativity which comes from Brandon. But we love him for it. I want to thank Blaine Brown, our editor, for doing such a bang-up job editing the show every week. If you want to hang out with us after the show and you're listening to this live, you can do that. We'll have a live question and answer segment for a little bit that is exclusive to the live show. If you want to check out the recorded show, you can go to podcast.insertcredit.com or you could check it out on iTunes. Leave us a nice review. We like to hear nice things about ourselves. If you're not listening to this live, why the heck not? You can find out when we're doing it by following us on the Facebook group. That's facebook.com/ICpodcast, or following us on Twitter. I'm at Alex Jaffe, Frank's at Frank Cifaldi, Tim's at 108. Brandon's not here, but you can follow him as well. He's at Necrosofty. David probably won't tell you whenever we're broadcasting, but you should probably follow him as well. He's at David Hellman. It's spelled like it sounds. And if you want to send in your votes for the best video game of all time, we're still taking votes for that. So send those to podcast@insertcredit.com as well as any other questions you might have for the show. I'm Alex Jaffe.
I'm the Frank Cifaldi there.
I'm Tim Rogers, and if you want to play video ball and you're in the San Francisco Bay Area on November 2nd, which is Saturday, which is just a couple days from now, November 2nd, 2013, for our super future listeners, just look go to dayofthedevs.com. Double Fine is having a party, so go check that out.
I'm video gonna go ball's going to
be there. Are you going to be at that?
Yeah.
I'll see you there.
Cool.
I'll bring a big bag of almonds.
This was a podcast.
All right, we did it.
Podcast over, yeah!